The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast is being brought to you by Loot Crate. Matthew, I know what you know that what Loot Crate is. You subscribe to it, right?
I do. The loots and the cratesons, they're awesome.
Yeah, here's the neat thing about the Loot Crate is it's full of geek and gamer items and pop culture goodness. And for less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that include t-shirts, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. Now, the onslaught of big summer blockbusters makes May the perfect time to celebrate some of pop culture's unstoppable, unrelenting, and unbeatable characters and objects. So, the May Loot Crate, they've got something you can carry, something for your kitchen, and a cool figure to go with your monthly tee and pin. Featuring two Marvel items plus Warcraft and Dragon Ball Z, Matthew.
Oh, it's over 9,000!
No crate should have this much power, am I right? Now, here's the important part, Matthew. Are you paying attention? Get a pencil out if you have to, but you have until May 19th, at 9 o'clock p.m. to subscribe to receive this month's crate.
And that's Pacific time.
That's Pacific time, correct.
Yep.
If you miss that deadline, you're out. And there's always some good stuff in Loot Crate. So, Matthew, how would people, if they are interested in signing up for Loot Crate, how would they go about that?
You go. You point your browser to lootcrate.com/spoilers. Enter the code spoilers to save $3 on any new subscription. Just that easy. Lootcrate.com/spoilers. Sit back. Wait for the awesome stuff to come to your door in that cool black box every month. Actually had to tell my kid she can't open it till I'm home.
I know. That's our rule, too. But the neat thing about the Loot Crate boxes is you can turn them inside out, and they always have something cool on the inside. The April one had a maze, like a 4D maze that you could go all the way around the outside of the box and try to get to the center. It's so awesome.
The one with the Batman figure in it was actually the city of Gotham.
Yeah.
So you could use your little diorama. That was awesome. Cool. Yep.
Thank you, Loot Crate, for sponsoring this episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast.
Yay, podcast night!
This episode is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIP members.
VIP stands for very important people, and their small monthly contributions ensure that this podcast remains free for all of you.
If you would like to become a bronze, silver, or gold VIP member, go to members.majorspoilers.com for more information.
I sure do thank you for your support. Now, here's your show.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course spoilers, and goes into detail about the topics discussed. So, if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items they talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Steven. And you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, comics and movies, TV and merch, Navy Beans, Meatloaf Sandwich. We're checking in on the original comic book Civil War on the eve of the movie Talkin' Turkey on the YouTube and burst into song like a crystal gem. Then stack up Sonic Superiority with our kick butt poll of the week. Plus, we'll spin the Wheel of Destiny and talk about the news of the day. Only the RNG knows for sure. So place your bets and get your scorecards because the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 675. Is this really 675? 675 issues of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Wow. We love this show, and we know our listeners love this show, and that's why we continue to do it week after week. Let's get to that Wheel of Destiny and see what we have on our news items this week. Oh, Bone returns. Punisher gets a series at Netflix, and the DC Universe Online is on Xbox One. There it stops at Bone Returns. This is an interesting item from Jeff Smith. He said that he's going back to Boneville. It's been 25 years since Bone first appeared on store shelves.
I'm going to see if I can't
unwind. And at that time, we've seen a complete story. We fell in love with characters. We watched others depart. Now, in a new graphic novel, Jeff Smith takes the Bones, Bartleby, and the baby rat creatures across the desert to Boneville.
Are they really still going to be babies, though?
Well, I would imagine that it takes place right after the previous series left off, but it's just been such a long time. Has it been 20 years?
It's called, I think, maybe even longer.
Well, it's 25 years, I guess. But Bone Coda is scheduled to arrive in July. Now, I really love the Bone series. I love what Jeff Smith has done. I love Jeff Smith's storytelling. Mm-hmm. But what is your reaction to this?
I'm all for it. And I think the reason why is because Smith has shown himself to be able to step away from the project until he has a story that he really wants to tell. I mean, it's not like we keep getting Bone every time Jeff runs out of petty cash. He's gone away from it. It's been a while. The series completed and finished and had a solid ending. And now he feels like he's got something else to say. Could it be Dark Knight 2? Yes. But well, that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm any less excited for it.
I don't know. So part of me is like, yay, there's more Bone. This is just a one-shot thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a new series or anything, but it's just one big companion book. But part of me is like, oh, man, this could definitely be one of those careful what you wish for moments where Bone was such a good standalone phone book collection that you can go pick up and read and enjoy to your heart's content.
Right.
And you're dying for more Bone. And I'm not saying Jeff Smith doesn't still have it, because he does.
Right.
But what if it's not as good as everyone anticipates or hopes for?
Well, if it's been 25 years, it may be that, you know, 25th anniversary special look back story where it's not meant to be a companion piece so much as a celebration of what went before. And even if it's not, even if it is a, you know, a whole new arc and something new and different, I feel like if I trusted anybody, it would be Jeff Smith. Jeff Smith is one of those creators that I feel like has a solid hold on things. You know, a couple of years ago when they brought back Astro City, people are like, well, is it ever going to be the same? Yeah, because the creator knows what he's doing. And I feel that way about Jeff Smith specifically. And I really do like the teaser piece that you have up at Major Spoilers with the Beetle.
That's actually the teaser image that they sent out.
Yeah. With that Beatles crossing Abbey Road shot, including, you know, Phony Bone barefoot, which is very important.
Yeah. Do we need another Bone story? That's the next question, because
it's so difficult.
First story, the huge arc that, like I said, you can get in at a giant phone book form, and it's one of the best selling books from for kids when it comes up for the monthly school book things that they do. It's still a big seller there.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need another story? I mean, I loved how that one ended. I'm not sure I want to pick right back up where it ended and be like, oh, okay, this. I was kind of content before. I mean, sure, we always want more Beatles music.
Do we need a 75th retelling of the death of Thomas and Martha Wayne? Do we need another story where Peter Parker and J. Jonas Jameson throw barbs at each other? Do we need Nathan Fillion to come back around and argue with his TV wife? I mean, it really comes down to what you expect from your fiction. And I feel like the title is a good indicator. Calling it a coda implies that he realizes and knows that it's been a long time since Bone. And I feel like this is kind of an announcement that says, here's a companion piece. Here's a closing chapter or an end bit or a, you know, something you haven't seen from the characters in Boneville. And
well, we have never seen Boneville. So,
well, we have briefly
at
the very beginning because they were running from Boneville and Phony's inflatable phony. But yeah, we haven't actually been to Boneville, and I feel like it could be a Free as a Bird single. You remember when the Beatles released that single?
Mm-hmm.
Like 15 years after John passed away, it was one last collaboration.
Right.
The Monkees just actually released a single with Davey vocals.
Yeah, now is that a whole album or is Davey that just died?
There's a whole album. I believe the only one that has Davey vocals is the first single that they released because, you know, Davey passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah. But is it needed? I don't know. I don't know. It seems there's something that as much as I want to succeed for some reason, part of me just is super, super cautious and super, super nervous about this for whatever reason.
The thing about it is when you say do we need another chapter? The answer is always going to be, depends on who you are. But do we need more work from a creator who has a unique voice and has skill and has something to say and a really, really strong way of saying it? I'd say yeah. I mean, you were heavily into Rassel, the follow-up comic. Yeah,
Rassel was really good. And it was a total different departure. No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's not like – I'm not saying that Jeff Smith doesn't got it, because he certainly does. If you look at Rassel and you look at the what's the one he's doing with the Neanderthal man or the guy in the jungle. I forget what that series is called. But it's they're really good. And so, you know, it's great to see that kind of stuff. But I know that they didn't sell as well as Bone.
It's kind of that question of, do we need, you know, the new season of Welcome Back Cotter after Cotter left? Do we need a return to Charlie's Angels without any of the angels? And I think the answer is some people will. Some people will demand it. They want this. They need this. And for all intents and purposes, I think what it really boils down to is, if Jeff is willing to make it, I'm willing to give it a shot.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's only one thing. I mean, you're going to have to buy one book. But it'll come out in July, and I'll pick it up. Sure, I'll pick it up and read it. I just hope it doesn't turn out to be RoboCop 2.
RoboCop 2 was kind of okay. 3 was terrible.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. It's kind of okay.
It's going to make House Party 2 look like House Party 3.
Okay. So listeners, what do you think? Head over to majorspoilers.com, share your thoughts on this story. It's there in the show notes. You can find it on both your iTunes feed, RSS feed, all the other feeds that are Major Spoilers. So check it out. With the news out of the way.
News.
Let us talk about reviews.
Reviews. I'm now, so glad you picked this up.
Here's the thing. I do not like Smosh. I understand what they're doing, and I understand who their target audience is.
Right.
But it just seems like they seem like such a commentary on, quote unquote, the kids of today, right?
Okay. I have to tell you this. Before the show, when I saw that you were throwing yourself on the grenade that is Smosh number one, I said, hey, Widget, what's a Smosh? And she walks into the room solemnly, and she sits down on the ottoman and kind of strokes her chin a little bit, and she says, there are a couple of gorks.
Yeah. If you don't know what Smosh is, listeners, they are two guys that started, I want to say in high school, just putting out some of the just really dumb humor stuff. And I mean, I'm hesitant to use the R word, but it really kind of falls into that kind of humor. And they've parlayed that into a YouTube empire. They had a movie, which was horrible, I might add. And now, as Dynamite puts it, the kings of YouTube comedy are bringing their wildly popular brand of humor to comics. And they kick things off with the Super Virgin Squad.
Okay, I'm out.
Three geeks who banded together.
From remote galaxies.
No, from your neighborhood. One guy wears a little beanie with a propeller that actually makes him hover off the ground slightly.
That's against the laws of physics. This cannot be funny.
There is another guy who has the braces, you know, that go up onto the headgear thing, who can bite through anything. And then there's Stevie, the super fat kid. They're all socially awkward. They're all virgins. They must all be in, I want to say, middle school or something like that. But of course they're using trashy humor. Stevie's mom is going on a blind date with someone she met on the web, and they're like, we must stop this. And so they go to, so one of the things is they go to this restaurant where their mom and the guy are having their dinner, and an attractive waitress walks out the back door, and I forget which one it is. I think it's Billy. He's like, oh no. No, the no-no place is starting to rise. I can't do this right now. No. Then there's a part where, you know, the woman's on the phone talking to her boyfriend, and or somebody's like, well, he better get the washing machine fixed. I can't come to work commando anymore. And, of course, she's wearing a short miniskirt. And then as all three of them were running off, the fat one is like, hey, we didn't even see your camel toe.
Oh.
Then on top of that, they break into the the man's house that's dating Stevie's mom. And in an attempt to get out of the house when he shows up, they decide to blow it up by committing arson.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, hey, man, let's rip the gas line and let's light this thing and run. And then the whole house blows up. Now, if that isn't horrible enough, which it is, in my opinion, I think it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
The backup story in this, I don't even know what to call it. It's called That Damn Neighbor. Benny Jean and Cletus want to drink beer and admire their lawn flamingo, but the weirdo next door will not be ignored. And apparently the weirdo next door has a super fast car, and the redneck jerk guy, probably Benny Jean, challenges him to a race the next day.
Benny Jean.
She's not my lover. No.
Yeah.
So they get, the two of them are in their cars getting ready to race, and they peel out, and we see Benny Jean in his car, and we see behind him, and we see the other car of the weird neighbor behind him. And the next thing, the next panel literally is him reacting like, what the what? And then the weird neighbor has already finished the race. And the guy says, I didn't even see him pass me. And he lays down on the sidewalk, the end.
That's not funny.
Now this is, it doesn't even, it's not even a story. Now, this is written by Michael Motormott and Yale Stewart, mm-hmm. with art by Franco Vigilino and Yale Stewart. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised they didn't just put by anonymous or by what's his name, the movie guy. I mean,
Alan Smithy.
I can understand people wanting to hitch their wagon to the Smosh roller coaster of internet millions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this book ain't the way to do it.
Ugh.
I tried to, and I'll be honest. I know people are going to say, well, Stephen, you hate Smosh to begin with. So why'd you even read this book if you're just going to condemn it? I'm not going to condemn it totally because the art is pretty and it's kind of neat in a cartoony way. And I can understand where the writers are coming from in creating this, this team of nerds who want to go out and try to do good things while just failing everywhere and making inappropriate humor. And that's what Smosh really is. It's a bunch of gork humor. Mm-hmm. But this is not a good comic.
Mm.
And I really tried to move my hatred for the Smosh out of the picture. I can only give this 2 slices of meatloaf, and that's being generous, I think. I mean, I didn't give it 1, didn't give it 0, but really I think people need to stop supporting Smosh. and I really don't think you need to buy this comic. And the day that Dynamite announced that they were doing this, I think I tweeted out, Dynamite, I'm so disappointed in you. I may have just lost my faith in you because they're doing this. Don't believe me? Go watch some of their stuff, Matthew. I don't know if you've ever seen it. But the last time I looked at it, it was something about making his girlfriend's boobs bigger by creating an app.
Oh.
That was probably about 2 years ago. So maybe they've matured enough. But I have seen the Smosh movie. And no, they haven't. So if you like this kind of humor, a lot of it is inappropriate humor. If you like that stuff, then maybe this is for you. And maybe if you're a fan of Smosh, maybe this is for you. But we already know that 12-year-olds are not buying comics in droves, and I don't think this is going to drive them to the comic book store either. So 2 slices of meatloaf for me. Smosh number 1. We'll see how long it lasts at Dynamite. You know that they've been locked in for 6 issues. I feel sorry for the company and for the people who wrote this book that they had to tie themselves to this group. So I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I mean, it's I don't know. I don't want to say anything else, but it's kind of the equivalent of spending too much time building up people who don't need to be celebrities. And we all know those people out there, and the media just continues to make them more and more popular by talking about them every 5 minutes. That's what this comic book is doing.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway,
that's
sorry,
rough.
Everybody. Yeah. All right, Matthew, what do you have for us this week? Hopefully something a little nicer.
A little less depressing. Unlike this, I actually chose something
that I already liked and thought might be interesting in comic book form. Boom Studios Kaboom imprint, Steven Universe and the Crystal Gems, number 2 of 4.
We are the Crystal Gems.
Exactly.
We'll always save the day.
And?
And even if we don't, we'll still always find a way.
You can't. Written by Jocelyn Fenton, art by Kristen Garland.
Yeah.
Before I start singing along and correcting Steven.
Yeah.
Steven Universe and the Crystal Gems is a limited series set in the world of Steven Universe.
Of course.
If you've seen it, you know how problematic a prospect that would be.
Mm-hmm.
Because Steven Universe episodes are weird. They're either standalone wackiness or they're this weird, intricate mythology that isn't 100% solid or known yet. Steven Universe has a lot of unspoken secrets well into the second season. So this season or this episode, this comic book here, this issue that I'm reading, this thing.
Did you read the first one by chance?
I did not.
Okay.
And you know why? You know my theory of if I'm going to grab a book and just randomly read it, I will decide whether I want to go back and find out.
Okay.
So this issue starts with a camp out in the woods with the Crystal Gems waking up to hear Steven yelling at the top of his lungs. Now, bear in mind that the gems don't really sleep well necessarily, but
right. They don't
they're
sleep
asleep.
Well.
It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And the first page, I will tell you, any concerns I had were gone at the end of the first page because Pearl and Garnet – at the sound of Steven in distress, immediately call up their weapons in a really good-looking sequence where it's clearly Pearl, it's clearly Garnet. I'm like, okay, they've got the cartoon style down.
Right.
They know what they're doing here.
Yeah, so they're on model.
And then they immediately fall down because when they drew their weapons, they forgot to get out of their sleeping bags first. So it's a cute moment. They immediately rush after Steven.
Yeah.
And they find that Steven has had an encounter with the Glass Ghost. Ooh.
The Glass Ghost, okay.
It turns out last issue, Pearl told them an old Crystal Gem campfire story about a ghost made of glass. And it's a made-up story. And Pearl is like, this story is totally made up, and we've already told you it's not real. But Amethyst isn't buying this. You know, Amethyst is the youngest gem. She's the cool teenage older sister.
Yeah.
And Pearl actually says it took Amethyst centuries to get over the first time she heard the story. And Amethyst is very angry at this for some reason. So they go home. And Steven is freaked out by everything glass, which is sad because the TV is his best friend and it's made of glass. But he has to go and ask the one guy who knows all about creepy things. So he ends up in the lair of Ronaldo. Do you know Ronaldo?
I don't think so. I only watched like the first two seasons.
You'd like Ronaldo. He's a chunky guy in an ugly shirt who has lots of conspiracy theories.
But Matthew, I already don't like you. Why would I like Ronaldo?
Now. First of all, I said chunky and conspiracy theories.
But I like
not
Bruce.
Overtly fat and back issues.
Oh, all right.
Oh, that's just mean. Damn it, Steven, Ronaldo is you.
No, it's not.
Anyway, the most of this issue is actually Steven and Ronaldo having a discussion about ghosts. And the voices, aside from Steven seeming particularly young in this issue, which since I don't know where it takes place, this may actually be a younger Steven.
Yeah.
This may take place prior to season one. But In the issue, he and Ronaldo end up going out into the woods together to investigate, and they find what may be the ghost, and Steven is totally freaked out, and something terrible happens, and all of a sudden, seconds before he would be dragged away by the ghost, Amethyst's purple whip grabs him and pulls him back, and there's a big cliffhanger shot of Amethyst standing in the trees looking super determined. Dun, dun, dun. Continue next issue.
Uh-oh. Next issue.
I do love Amethyst, by the way. I love me some Amethyst. This is very solid for an animated adaptation because there are always two questions. Are the likenesses right? You know, that is a big issue when you're reading a comic adaptation. They're solid here. Everybody looks mostly right. The points where they're off model or slightly different aren't any more than the points where they're off model in actual episodes. If you watch the episodes, you can see the art direction sort of changing depending on who directed the episode.
Yeah.
So it's a little acceptable. And the story feels it feels kind of like a Scooby-Doo comic. Have you ever read a Scooby-Doo comic and you're like, this is clearly a Scooby-Doo story? And everybody in the story is acting like they should for a Scooby-Doo story. But it's, you know, it's a side thing, or it's non-canonical, or however you want to look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Your brain immediately wants to treat the adaptation as somehow less important. It's a step down. This doesn't fall so much into that hole. It really feels like it's the same stuff, the same characters in the same setting that we see on TV. Three slices of meatloaf. It's good. It makes me want to go back and get one. And I do want to know what's going on with this glass ghost, because clearly it can't be what it seems to be. Pearl explains in the episode that it can't be what it seemed to be, because A, there's no such thing as ghosts, and B, Stephen, glass is not a gem. It's very important you know that.
I think you may be right there.
Yeah, I always am.
Yeah, right. Okay. Let's see. Oh, my goodness. That's all the reviews we have this week, because
you know what that means.
Ashley or Rodrigo here. It means people can head over to majorspoilers.com and check out all the reviews that are over there. And while you're over there, if you're looking to buy some stuff, it doesn't matter if you're looking to buy a comic book, if you're looking, because that's one of the things you can buy from Amazon now with the Comixology deal and the Amazon deal. Maybe a trade paperback, maybe a movie, maybe a computer, a TV, knickknacks. I mean, you can find almost
patty whacks.
Let me look and see. Can we find a patty whack on Amazon? Sure enough, Knick-Knack Paddywhack, New York Times bestseller illustrated children's book. There's also Paddywhack Lane, posable figure and accessories set. Paddywhack Lane Costume Club Treehouse. Paddywhack, which looks like some kind of a soda from Idiot Glee. There's also, you can find your paddywhacks. I bet you can find your knickknacks all over at Amazon.com. And here's the thing that we need you to do. If you're all going to buy your knickknacks and your paddywhacks over at Amazon, please use the link over at majorspoilers.com, because when you click on that link and you make your purchase, a little bit comes back our way. It's not going to cost you anything extra. A little bit comes back our way, allows us to keep the lights on week after week. So there you go. All right, Matthew, now that we're done with that.
You know what that means.
What does it mean?
Poll of the week.
This week, sent in from Silver Gray. He asks the all-important question, who wins in a screaming match? Is it Black Canary or is it Banshee? It's a DC Marvel thing going on here.
DC versus Marvel.
Now, who is Banshee, Matthew?
Banshee, also known as Sean Cassidy, was a teen idol in the 1970s.
I was going to say, I think my cousins had his posters all over the wall.
Yeah, Ron.
Yeah.
And he grew up to be Irish somehow. And joined the all-new, all-different X-Men circa 1975. The Banshee has a super powerful screamy voice that he uses to fly and attack people with attack bolts. And in some settings, I want to say he's been able to use it to cause hallucinations, but that may be an early story. Mostly he does screamy, but he's powerful enough that he can screamy and talk at the same time.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that is interesting. Does that. Meanwhile, over in the DC universe, there's Black Canary. I mean, she's been around since the early days of the Justice Society.
1947.
Yeah, she's an old one there, and she's great at her job. Mm-hmm. One of the things that she has had, and this is in her later story, she has something called the Canary Cry, a high-powered sonic scream which could shatter objects and incapacitate enemies. So, with Banshee and Black Canary.
Mm-hmm.
Who is going to win in a screaming match?
See, you said a screaming match.
Yeah.
Which defines my answer. Black Canary is an extremely capable tactician. She is an excellent hand-to-hand combatant. She's one of the best martial artists in the DC universe. Certainly more dangerous in combat than Banshee has ever shown himself to be. But her scream has always been kind of a last-ditch, reflexive, one-shot power, kind of like Daffy Duck with his I can only do it once. Banshee's primary ability is his screaming constantly, his ability to use that to fly, his ability to use that for concussive bursts. In a screaming contest, I have to give the edge to Banshee because he has shown to have more – basically more chips on the screaming. When it comes down to who would win in a fight, always go with the specialist. Black Canary has a lot of other things going for her, but Banshee's scream is demonstrably more powerful in play.
Yep, I'm going to have to agree with you here. The thing with Black Canary is she's actually blown her voice out and not been able to use her sonic scream or her canary cry. Mm-hmm. And so that really kind of diminishes her in a fight with someone who is screaming all the time. And so I had to go with Banshee. I agreed with you. I was like, well, as much as I like Black Canary, and I think she's a fantastic hero, has been around for a lot longer than Banshee. But Banshee, that's his job, is to sonic scream.
She's got maybe 15 years on him. And, you know, technically the current Black Canary is actually the daughter of Eva. Actually, I don't know if she is anymore.
No, I don't
know. In the new DCU, you know, in the new
Rebirth.
If the new 52.
Coming right at you.
Clap, clap.
If we compare their strongest versions, I think Banshee would probably win, says Malone. Jeffrey says, I just don't like Banshee's costume, which is kind of weird. Although if you if you look at the full version of the one that I cropped out, it is kind of neat to see the stripes actually
the underarm
look like
stripes.
Look like the Sonic Wave. I think that's well done.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Fishnets for the win, says Boo 3. I also pick Zatanna over Doctor Strange. Slappy says, provided he is not passed out drunk, I will... Oh, come on. I will give it to Banshee with his ability to fly around, even though he is screaming like a jackass. That will give him the edge. Let's see. Who else do we have? Black Bolt,
jackasses
hands down. No
scream,
contest, says
pray.
Sam. Although Black Bolt is not in this contest.
It's true.
Let's see. Ray says, I recall the Black Canary being loud enough to stagger Superman. We all know how overpowered he is. I would go with Canary over Banshee. So that's what some of the commenters have used. You can head over to majorspoilers.com and read all of the comments and add your own after you cast your vote in the Major Spoilers poll of the week. Matthew, where's it sitting at right now?
Right now, I'm looking at 81 votes in the bag, a very close race, 53% saying Black Canary, 47% Banshee, which means two votes more for Black Canary than Banshee.
Votes.
This is another example where I think people may be using some improper equivalencies, because the only time I remember Black Canary staggering Superman was post-Zero Hour Superman, who was less powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. They took him down a notch before they brought him back up around 1998, 99. So I don't know. It's a difficult thing to say. If you really want my money, in a fight, Black Canary will dismantle Banshee a piece at a time.
If it's fisticuffs, yes. If it's a true fight.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it wouldn't
in
have that.
In a screaming match, the only possible winner is Tyrock. Yeah.
All right. That's the Major Spoilers poll of the week. And
week.
Yeah. This portion of the Major Spoilers podcast is being brought to you by Tweaked Audio. So many different styles, so many different colors. The optional microphone is the one that I would go for. Engineered for durability, noise reduction design. These are great earbuds, earphones, whatever you want to call them. Head over to tweakedaudio.com. And when you check out, use the code, what is it, Major? Use the checkout code Major when you check out. And you're going to get 33% off the price. Thank you, Tweaked Audio, for sponsoring this episode of the Major Spoilers podcast.
Yeah.
It's a shorter episode this week because we don't have our other people chiming in.
And the reason why is they didn't want to be part of the discussion of our trade paperback this week.
Well, so Civil War, the movie is Captain America Civil War is coming out this week. And so before everyone started clamoring, saying, can you guys review this series, which I think I've kind of avoided for the last couple of years when people have asked us to do it.
Well, yeah, because it's awful.
It is. But I finally broke down and I said, okay, let's review Civil War since it's tie-in to this movie, and let's discuss it. And I'll be honest, this is the first time that I've read all seven issues collected. I read I read issue two, and I think I read the one, the Captain America one, where he gets killed at the end. And that's about it. And then a couple of the Spider-Man ones after he's been unmasked.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the first time I've read it collected all in one piece. And the first thing that I will say about Civil War is, this is the problem with Marvel event books, because Civil War, the seven issue series, the volume, the one volume that you can get is so disjointed because things are bouncing around from one location and story arc to another that you never know what's going on. I mean, one moment Peter Parker is unmasking himself as Spider-Man and telling the world who he is. And then literally three panels later, Tony and Spider-Man are fighting it out in Tony Stark in the Avengers Tower over Spider-Man's decision to switch sides. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, what is the reason besides one panel where Peter is asking Mary, have you noticed that Tony's acting weird lately? Have we made the right choice? Of course, if you want to find out what all that's about, you have to read the other 100 plus issues that are out there in order to get the complete story. So that's one of the main problems with Civil War by itself.
Yes. Civil War is storytelling on a very skeletal framework, but everything happens at the top of the writer's lungs. Everything is posited as this world-changing, absolutely difficult moment. And the real issue that I have with it is not necessarily that it's incoherent, but it is incoherent. Don't get me wrong.
It's not totally incoherent, and we'll get into that here in a minute.
The thing about these issues, they were designed to be monthly or sort of monthly centerpieces for all the other books in the Marvel Universe to rotate around.
Right.
And when you come right down to it, the biggest problem with Civil War is the arbitrary nature of what happens in it. Because things happen in this book that don't necessarily have any real basis other than the writer wanted to write them. The writer wanted this to happen. The Superhero Registration Act is something that was actually strongly opposed by Reed Richards in its previous incarnation. But we are to believe now that with, you know, a piece of quick dialogue, oh yeah, he's changed his mind. Now he's on the side of Iron Man, which that does happen.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. But you got to give me something to make me believe it.
Yeah.
This, you know, this story doesn't have real character moments in it.
No.
For these are, anybody.
These are super quick vignettes that I honestly am surprised that there were not editorial balloons or editorial boxes saying, be sure to check out Amazing Spider-Man number 212 on sale now. Or because literally every panel would be filled with those things so that you could figure out what the heck is going on in here. Now, it's not a hard story to figure out. What happens is you have a bunch of C-list Avengers or a C-list heroes who are part of a reality series.
The New Warriors, which, by the way, makes me very angry.
They are trying to take down some heavy hitters for a reality show. And in the process, one of the bad guys nukes himself and in the process destroys a city block, which includes a school full of children.
Right.
And that causes – and then in the fallout – Tony Stark is accosted by a mother of one of the dead children, and he's like, well, you know, if we don't have every superhero register themselves, the government is going to ban superheroes. And we already are seeing what's happening with the X-Men because they've got Sentinels monitoring them 24/7. So what we need to do, and this is the interesting thing, in Hollywood, when it came time for censorship, there was this threat that the government was going to come in and censor Hollywood. This is in the 1920s and 30s. And Hollywood said, you know what, government, we don't want you to come in and do this. We will create something ourselves. We will create this ratings boards for ourselves so that you don't have to get involved and you don't have to ruin what we're doing. Same thing happened in comic books with the Comic Code Authority. The comic book industry said, you know, we'll police ourselves. We'll make sure that everybody's following along with these rules so the government doesn't step in and do this. And this is what I think Tony Stark is seeing, is he fears that if they don't follow this Registration Act where every hero has to be background checked, every hero has to be their real names have to be given and they have to be, you know, they'll be paid, but they can't just go vigilante justice, that the government will outlaw all superheroes. And that would be horrible. So he gets his other brain institute together, the other half of, or at least half of the Illuminati together, Hank Pym, Reed Richards, as you already mentioned, and Tony Stark all agree that, hey, if we do the Superhero Registration Act, we'll still be able to do good for the world. Everybody will get paid and we can train everybody. We can make sure that, you know, teenagers aren't running out into battle and getting themselves killed. We can make sure that people know how to approach a bad guy, a villain. We can train them on how to use their powers properly. So from that standpoint, from what Tony Stark's thinking, it's not a horrible idea, you know? Police ourselves before the government takes it all away from us.
It's not, but here's the problem that you come into. And Marvel Editorial said multiple times during the series that it is not unthinkable for people to want superheroes to have oversight and to have, you know, accountability.
Yeah.
And it's not, except for one important problem. And that problem comes in the suspension of disbelief in your universe. This is a universe that contains, and a story that contains, the Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
The existence of the Punisher and the Punisher being allowed to be treated even tangentially as a superhero the way he is in this story and the Marvel Universe at large means that that exact thought process undermines one of the key bits of the Marvel Universe. When you say, for instance, Frank Miller in 1986 said, "What happens if Batman ages?"
Mm-hmm.
And it made for a really interesting story. Not a good one, but an interesting one.
Oh, it was a good story.
No, it wasn't. Now, here's the thing about this issue. When you say, "Does Batman age?" you have to make concessions to that universe. They had to put it in the future. It had to be a setting 20 minutes into the future
because it had to be not in continuity.
It had to be separate from the DC universe.
Right,
this is central to the Marvel universe as we know it. And the big problem that they have here is there are so many people who have to be brought into this to make it all work. And Maria Hill has to be played as a hard case who's willing to kill any of the superheroes who stand against her. She's willing to kill Captain America.
Right. Because
that, and to me,
but it really is a big statement about, and this is Mark Miller, this is written by someone who is outside of the United States looking in. And so oftentimes I find outsiders' view of America very fascinating because oftentimes they will point at things and say, "Well, this is what you guys are about, whether you know it or not." And this whole, "You're either with us or you're against us," is the whole thing with Maria Hill. Is like she is so willing to do what her country wants her to do that if it means that Cap is stepping out of line, then yeah, as much as she may not like it, then I got to do it because this is what the country wants. This is what the country needs. Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing to think about is how far will we be led as sheep? How far will Americans be led as sheep down a hole of somebody who may be charismatic like Tony Stark or a billionaire like Tony Stark or someone who is more practical and pragmatic saying, "Hey, wait a minute now. We don't need to go this far." And so I think it's as much as I hate this story, it is an interesting commentary on the American people. And interestingly, as I read this today, I thought it was more relevant today than it was when it was first published in 2006 or whenever it was published. Yeah.
But the thing about it is there is the basis of some commentary to be had here, but I feel like it's undermined by aspects of this. Like, for instance, we get to a point where Iron Man and Captain America are going head to head, right?
Right.
And they're like, "We both have strong points. We both have a point." And then Iron Man brings out a clone of Thor that he created illegally and immorally behind Thor's back, who immediately murders the one character who, by the way, hasn't been seen in years before this story.
Mm-hmm. Goliath.
Goliath is suddenly a top-tier player. He gets murdered because, well, we needed to murder somebody. The thing is, we are at a point where they're trying to show us a story where both sides have strong points. But one side keeps making these jackass moves to the point where it feels like Iron Man's side is composed in this story of fascists.
And they're not far off on this because what Tony Stark wants to do is create the 50-state initiative to where there are a licensed team of heroes who will come in and protect you, will do what needs to be done. You just have to let them do their thing. So in a sense, he's like, "Yeah, we're going to put these military forces in your place. Don't worry about it. We're not trying to take over. I mean, we could if we suddenly wanted to because now we're organized and we have this big team. And if we wanted to roll over the government, we certainly could. But we're not fascists. We're trying to protect you." But it does get to this question of what do you value more, your safety or your freedom? And that is kind of the crux of this argument that Tony Stark and Steve Rogers are having. And they're, mm-hmm. you're right. They both have super valid arguments. The problem is they're like, have you ever read Dr. Seuss, The North Going Zack and The South Going Zack?
Mm-hmm.
Where they are two. So there's these two creatures that are walking. One is walking to the south and one is walking to the north, and their paths run into each other. And they're so set in their ways that one of them will not move a step to the east or a step to the west to go around. The other person has to move. And so for decades and centuries, those Zacks stay in place, and civilization has to build up and move around them because these two are so stubborn that they won't compromise and they won't listen to each other. And that's the problem with Tony Stark and Steve Rogers here, is they are so adamant and set in their ways that they both come off as big dicks in this story. Steve Rogers, Captain America, does too. I mean, he's trying to say, no way, we're not going to do it. I don't care if it's good for the people. I'm not unmasking myself because it puts too many other people in danger. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, I think Captain America's argument is a little weaker of the two. But what ends up happening is these two are so stubborn with one another that they're willing to kill one another
mm-hmm.
to prove their point. And in trying to prove their point, they prove the other person's point.
And that, I think, is the biggest problem with this story. It doesn't have a perspective. It doesn't have a point of view. It doesn't
right.
make a statement.
Well, I think that's why we probably should have read Civil War, the Daily Bugle series.
Absolutely not.
That way we can question whether Captain America really knows how to use MySpace.
I will never, ever know. I will call in sick. And the thing that is important about this book is it raises all sorts of questions mm-hmm. that it proceeds to completely and gleefully ignore in the favor of jackassery, in favor of big bombastic moments and Spider-Man unmasking for literally no reason. And Iron Man changing his operative, you know, the way that he operates, to the point where at the end of this book, you hate Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
You do. And you are very angry that Iron Man wins. And it's not, you know, an episode, an issue or two after this, that Captain America is assassinated under Iron Man's protection, directly right. because right. of Iron Man's actions.
Right.
And remember, this is 2 years before Iron Man got his big movie thing yeah. and everybody loved him, you know?
Yeah.
This is the book that made me dislike one of my favorite characters.
But I think you're supposed to dislike Tony Stark. I mean, he is supposed to come off as someone with good intentions who just let it get out of his control. And I think the Reed Richards bit at the end, where Reed is writing to his wife and saying, look, we just let this get out of control. This never should have happened. We should have been more open to these ideas and not let it go this far. But unfortunately, it did. And now we can't put the genie back into the bottle. And Tony Stark does realize that at the very end, where he's like, oh, my God, what have I done? I won. But at what cost? And the cost is he's lost his friends and he's alienated people. And he has done the thing that he's trying to put a stop to. The villains are going to take control of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
The Thunderbolts, which is a team made up of villains, Venom, Pumpkinhead, Jack Skellington. I forget who's all on the Thunderbolts.
You know what? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Because none of them are named or explained. And if you don't know those costumes.
No, you're right.
And some of the costumes aren't drawn to where you can recognize them.
No.
It doesn't matter.
The point is,
it literally doesn't matter.
The point is, just because they're a team that was on the side of what the people wanted, they're going to let villains take control over Colorado. And so this is proves that this kind of thing totally gets out of Tony Stark's hand and was doomed to fail and reset the status quo and all that good stuff. I agree with you. I mean, I can see the point of, and I think of all the stories, if you were to read anything of the split out stuff or anything having to do with Civil War, I would say the Spider-Man story is probably the most interesting, because here's a guy that is got a dual life. He's a teacher. He is also part-time working the Daily Bugle. He's got a nightlife of Spider-Man. He's got a wife and he's got an Aunt May who takes care of him. And Tony Stark comes to him and says, look, kid, you need to unmask so that everyone knows that if Spider-Man is willing to unmask, this can't be a bad thing. And oh, by the way, you're going to get a regular paycheck. We will put you up in Stark Towers, at Avengers Tower, or are they in Stark Tower? I forget.
Stark Tower, they're calling it.
We'll put you up in Stark Towers. You can live there. You'll have a butler. Your aunt will be taken care of. Everything will be fine. Peter does that. And then as the series in Spider-Man progresses, he realizes this is not really the thing that I want to get into because they're doing some really bad stuff. They are locking heroes away in the negative zone with other major villains. And this isn't cool. And so he changes his mind. But the problem is, and this is the thing that led to so much fan outrage later on, is Kat's already out of the bag. The villains know who Spider-Man is. Doc Ock knows that he almost married Spider-Man's aunt. Or did. Or whatever that thing went. Mm-hmm. To the point where Peter Parker had to make a deal with the devil to make everyone, or actually it was Mary Jane, had to make a deal with the devil to make everyone forget.
Another deal with another devil.
Yeah. To make everyone forget that he was Spider-Man. So if you were to read anything with Civil War, I think the Spider-Man arc, I think, is the most interesting, although it has the most frustrating undo of anything.
Yeah.
But this is, so Civil War is interesting in that it's a high concept idea that's worth talking about. This, should superheroes be registered? Should superheroes be registered, Matthew? Yes or no, do you think?
Well, this is the problem that you have, is if you register a superhero, you've invalidated 80 years of comic books. When you ask, should a superhero be registered, the answer can't be yes or no. It has to be, let's fight about it.
No, but so I mean, you as an American citizen, right now, let's just say that, forget comic books, but let's just say suddenly all these superheroes started appearing, fighting crime, but doing it as vigilante justice. They're not following the law. They're breaking knees and elbows and all these things. And a lot of these villains that they're capturing are instant released because of the court system. Would you be in favor of these superheroes being registered so that they can be trained to do their job properly? Or should they just be allowed to continue to run amok?
The existence of a superhero in the real world would preclude this argument.
You think?
Because a superhero in the real world would be a criminal and would be pursued and arrested for vigilanteism. That's literally what it would be. If a superhero acted the way Captain America or Iron Man did, there are hundreds of civil crimes that they're both absolutely guilty of. So I think that the question again becomes, can you ask that question without undermining the fundamental storytelling structure of a shared superhero universe? And the answer is, you really can't. So if we were in a world where that were possible, I would say yes. But it's kind of like you said, the cat's already out of the bag on this. Superheroes have been operating in the Marvel Universe for the last 13 years, which,
you know,
covers
I bring it up a lot. I bring it up a lot about damage control and how we've never read a damage control series. But as a citizen, I would be, first of all, I wouldn't live in New York because every other week my apartment would be destroyed by the Hulk or Thor or an invasion from Atlantis or Doctor Doom trying to take something over. My insurance rates would be through the roof. And I would be like, why the hell are they letting this guy, Tony Stark, fly around and zap people in the middle of Central Park and destroy this beautiful park we have? Something ought to be done about this Tony Stark guy. He needs to be brought under control. So I would probably also be under this registration of the superheroes so that they can be trained to do their job correctly, so that there can be some accountability for what they do, and so that there wouldn't be a rotating door of villains just going into prison and getting right back out on technicalities because of vigilantes. My guess would be that it was talked about briefly in one of the issues, that they were going to give an amnesty to any of these people, including the Punisher, who could have come in, did a background check and determined whether he was suitable for doing his job or whether he would have to be locked up in the negative zone. So I don't know. But this is something that's really, I think this is a good discussion to have. Take it out of Marvel Universe, take it out of the DC Universe. Just say, if superheroes existed, should they have to register, or should you let a Kryptonian fly around and do whatever he wants?
See, and that's the thing about this story, is it does ask some pertinent and difficult questions, but it doesn't have anything to say about them.
No, it doesn't.
Literally makes no point other than, aren't these interesting theoretical questions to mull over? It doesn't try to answer them. It doesn't try to give you an expectation of realism. Well, I mean, even in the parts of the story where they try.
Yeah.
They try to give us realism. It's fake action movie realism. It's that moment where Captain America is faced with a decision to be arrested or run away, But being arrested means being faced with 55 armored guys shooting trank darts, and he escapes by surfing on an F-14.
Right.
I mean, there's no realism. There's no grounding of either the story or the questions being asked. So
I wonder, though, media can ask a question. A book can ask you to think about a question. A movie can make you think about a topic. A comic book can make you think about a topic. Without coming out and saying, here is the author's answer to this. I think, and again, I think this is what Civil War is trying to do, is it's asking questions to get people to talk about things. And if you think about 2006 or whenever this came out, comic books, not such a good time to be comic booking. I mean, sure, the conventions were doing good and there were some good things happening. We'd had the Batman Begins and all of that, but you're right. Iron Man hadn't yet come out. There hadn't been this resurgence of popularity of comic book tales. So maybe this was a way for Mark Miller to sit down and try to get people to have a conversation about this stuff. And I think that's okay if you don't resolve or if you don't give people the answer of saying, well, Tony Stark was wrong all along or Captain America was right all along and here's why. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's up for the reader to decide whether, you know, to ask those questions, talk with their friends, to get a conversation going, to spark debate. Maybe that was we don't know what the writer's intent was.
Sure, we do. It's Mark Miller.
I kind of feel
he wanted to make money.
I'm sure, but I kind of feel that that's what he was wanting to do, is get people to have a debate, to have a discussion, to open up. And again, this is before Twitter. This is before Facebook. Facebook was around on college campuses.
Twitter was around in 06, just barely.
Barely, but nobody was using it like they're using it today. I mean, social media was not where it's at then, 10 years ago, that it is today.
I think that there is an important quote by a fellow Scotsman of Mark Miller's that I want to bring up.
Sure.
Who pumps the Batmobile's tires? It's an effing made-up story, you idiot. Nobody pumps the tires. The thing about this story is it's taking these questions and it's providing a patina. It's providing a facade, a rococo of adult questions over a story that's really nothing more than – it's the equivalent of a 50s story where Superman and Batman prank each other for 20 issues to find out at the end that Robin's actually going to go out with Lois Lane and have dinner. You know, it's when you have a story and you're trying to deal with these big, you know, pseudo-social issues like this, I agree with you. It's an intriguing question to say, in the real world, would a superhero need to be monitored? Would a superhero need to be licensed? Would a superhero need to be an official person like law enforcement personnel, like the military, like even the fire department? But it's also a question that undermines its own point, because Spider-Man is the cornerstone of the Marvel Universe. Spider-Man is a 15-year-old kid in tights who gets shot at by police all the time. The police want to arrest Spider-Man for things that he may or may not have done. That is the fundamental bit of the Marvel Universe. Captain America is universally loved. The X-Men are universally feared. Iron Man is a big celebrity guy that people love who they don't know is his own bodyguard. All of these things come together for a universe that clearly should not have this big a problem with, say, Johnny Storm, who does, by the way, get brutally beaten by a crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny Storm is the equivalent of like a Channing Tatum in the Marvel Universe. And to have someone turn on him and beat him up because of an incredibly, in fact, overly and unnecessarily brutal thing that happens in issue one, it's another example of they're trying so hard to make it realistic that they have to go over the top and be unrealistic to give us the reason for the story.
I'm not so sure. I mean, look what's going on right now just in political debates where people are getting beat up over simple, stupid things. Now, in the real world, we know that there would never even come up with a discussion of whether superheroes need to be registered or not.
Right.
It would never happen. The government would never pass a thing. Why? Because every day kids are dying in schools and the government isn't doing a damn thing about it. And yet, well, a villain blows up a school. That's not going to me when I read that. Whether you have kids or not have kids, depending on how you think about putting children in danger or killing children or whatever, put that aside. What is going on now is kids are dying every day and we're not doing anything about it. So why would a supervillain blowing up a school make anything different? That's where
Moreover,
it becomes a little bit more unrealistic.
When you look at the fight that opens this series, mm-hmm. let's say you live in the Midwest, say the capital of a square state, and
Colorado,
two people get
Denver.
Into a fight
yeah.
that causes the death of a third person. Under the law, the way I understand it and the way that it, you know, actually happened here, both people go to jail. Both people created a situation where another person was injured or killed. Both of those people are criminals. If we're telling a realistic story, there wouldn't be a let's register superheroes. There would be a superheroes and supervillains are equally at fault for these endless battles. They should both immediately be taken into custody and put away. Iron Man should have his funds frozen. He should have his technology taken away from him. He should be imprisoned. That is the realistic expectation of this story. And it's not too much of a stretch for me to say that because that doesn't happen, the attempt to discuss real world issues is immediately hollow because you can't take them to the logical explanation. So, yes, I appreciate the Captain America versus Iron Man battle. And I feel like had it been a little less bombastic, had it been
caused by 600
children were annihilated, that is way over the top. And the story is just filled with these moments that look great on paper. It's like all da-da-da, it's all stinger and no climax.
Well, and that's the problem with this is because you're supposed to go and read the other stuff. That's what Marvel wants you to do. That's part of the gimmick. Had they done it right, had they done it like – I don't know. You can read Crisis on Infinite Earths without having to read all the spinoff stuff.
Right. Crisis on Infinite Earths makes sense as a story in those 12 issues.
I think you can even read Invasion as the three standalone issues. And it makes sense without having to read all of the other stuff about Australia and Aquaman and all that other stuff. This right. one really begs you to buy comic books and buy the other 100 comic books that it may be 100, maybe less than that. But I'm pretty, around 100, that you need to buy these in order to make the complete sense. And you've talked about this before, and you're absolutely right that when your comic event spills into a regular series and it's forcing people to buy into the event, that's the wrong way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I still think, and I'm not trying to defend this. I'm trying to find the appreciation in what Miller is doing as an outside commentator on America and where we stand on all this crazy stuff. I think he starts the question. You're right. It doesn't get answered here, but at least hopefully gets other people talking. The thing is, I think it gets answered in all the other books.
It doesn't. I worked in a comic store when this came out and I read nearly all of the crossovers, including the Howard the Duck issue. It doesn't. And that, I think, is the biggest problem because so many different writers were involved. If you read the external materials, you actually get an even more skewed view of things because certain writers came in with a point of view and wrote Captain America as explicitly the hero against the fascist Iron Man.
Right.
So that when this book ends, you have the fascists winning. You have the fascists winning, and it's a terrible
right.
place, and nobody wants any part of it.
And then that leads into the other things with Green Goblin becoming president and taking over a crazy world and everything just yep. going to crap. So it can serve as a prequel to a much larger story, a much larger cautionary tale of beware the lies that are being told to you because you will probably end up having to have the Green Goblin as your president. I don't know. It's... My thing is, bottom line for me is, and I don't like the art. The art is just okay in this book. Mm-hmm. Bottom line for me is, I can't recommend Civil War as a standalone series. I don't think it's that good. I think it's jarring. I think it's, I think the transitions are weak, and I think it begs you to buy the other tie-in issues in order to try to make sense of this. What I do like about this is it does ask the question, and really maybe they should have just put up one sign, kind of like what this movie is coming out this week. Whose side are you on? Do you register your superheroes or do you not? And who should register and who should not register, and those kinds of things. I think from a high concept idea, I think it plays really well. Condensed into a 7-issue comic book series, it doesn't work. So I really can't recommend Civil War, but I like the questions that it's asking. What about you, Matthew?
This was dumb. This was dumb from the very beginning. It's cynical. It is the epitome of a crossover cash grab. It takes characters and puts them willy-nilly throughout the story. Your job is to stand here and be killed. Your job is to stand here and be a bad husband. Your job is to stand here and be the face of the fascists. Nobody acts smart. Very few people act within character. The representative of Law and Order in Maria Hill is a bloodthirsty jerk who wants to murder the greatest American hero.
No, she doesn't want to marry the greatest American hero.
She wants to murder Captain America.
What's his name? Because he's flying around in his pajamas.
She does not like what's going on. This is a big, dumb, loud story. I don't recommend it. I want you to stay away from it. If you want to read some of the crossovers, be aware they will be tainted by connection to this big, dumb story. This is one of the dumbest comic books I have ever read, and I have read more comics than any sane person ever should. I don't recommend it. I don't want you to. This is my pledge to you. I will tell you the worst comic book in the history of the world. It is not this. It is Skate Man number one.
Yeah.
But if you took these 7 issues and piled them up and folded them and handed them to someone who had seen Skate Man and knew it was the worst comic in the world, they would not mistake this for Skate Man, but they would find it eerily familiar in its unfinished bravado and its inability to put together even the slightest hint of coherence. And yes, it does have a couple of badass moments in it. It does. And that's all it has going for it.
I'm just trying to figure out what the highlight of this entire book. I don't know. The highlight of this entire book is Peter Parker unmasking at the end of issue two. That's it. That is the highlight of this book.
Captain America realizing he's gone too far and punching out the Punisher is a very strong moment.
Yeah, that one's interesting too, but I don't know if it's a kick butt. I don't think it's a kick butt moment because both sides have those
Sue
moments.
Finally leaving Reed because he's gone too far and having Reed realize that he's gone too far and it's cost him everything. That's a good moment. It's never followed up on. Yeah. The Thing leaving his best friends to move to France because he cannot be a part of this turmoil doesn't happen in these issues, but is vaguely referenced when the Thing comes back from France in the final issue. That's a good moment. But again, it's not in this story. It's not dealt with or addressed or even really anything more than hinted in this big, dumb, top of your lungs shouting story.
Man, you got a lot of hate issues towards this series, Matthew.
It's a dumb book.
It's not a great book. It's not a good book.
It's not good. It's not good. If you wanted to tell me which comics I hate, I can go on and on and on. This one's just dumb. It's just dumb.
Interesting thing is this really split readers. Some people, and I'm not saying this is good. Again, I said I don't
recommend
this.
Some people thought Iron Man was a fascist. Some people thought he was a Nazi.
There were a lot of people who really, really, really dug this series and everything that tied into it. And there are a lot of people who just didn't. Some people like you were just like, this is dumb. I don't want any of this. This is not my Iron Man.
This is not my beautiful Stapler.
This is not my Wolverine sitting back in the corner saying he's not going to participate. There is a lot of stuff here for people to love and to hate. And I think if you're going to go buy it, be warned that neither one of us think this is a good book. But I think it asks some questions. But this is something even today, you just bring it up and it causes issues. I'm very interested to see how this movie works.
I don't think the movie has anything.
No, it's not going to have anything to do with this, but I mean, it's coming from this side where one is in the last movie, Avengers 2, they kind of started bringing it up. There were hints of it all throughout that movie of the Steve Rogers, Tony Stark disagreement over how things should be done. Mm-hmm. I'll just be interested to see how this is dealt with, and if you really have a bunch of people running around going, no, Team Stark is right, and a bunch of people going around going, no, Team Captain America is right. It'd be real interesting to see if this splits audiences on the two polarizing views of what goes on in the movie. It's also very interesting to see people argue still today over the merits of this book and the demerits of this book. So there you go. All right. That wraps it up for this installment of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening.
Sick like Rodrigo.
No, actually he had something else going on. It's Ashley who's sick this week. Thank you for being part of the Major Spoilers experience. Well, no, Matthew, I don't know why you called in sick. I enjoyed your conversation and input on this. Yeah. So we're going to be back next week to discuss Faster Than Light Volume 1. It's going to be a TV series soon.
Nice.
We're going to be discussing it because we know that you love comics. We do too. And we will talk with you next time.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your face if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.